Hi, y'all. Nicole here. This podcast is intended to inspire you on your personal spiritual journey to inner peace. I am not a psychologist or a medical doctor and do not offer any professional health or medical advice. This applies to the podcast guests and or co-hosts. If you are suffering from a psychological or medical condition, please seek help from a qualified health professional. You are listening to A Psychic Story Kids Edition, a podcast that helps kids and teens shift their vibration, develop their intuition, and become more empowered. If you want to feel a deeper connection to the divine, better understand your purpose, and use your intuition to drive your life, then being here listening now is no coincidence. Welcome to A Psychic Story Kids Edition. Our intuition is a natural part of who we are as both human beings and spiritual beings. It is what kept our ancestors safe and alive and made its way into our own. It's what I call spiritual DNA, and it's our senses today. But we aren't taught growing up what it looks like, how it makes us feel, or how to even process it. Adults who have psychic children have a lot of questions, starting with, is my child psychic? Here to help us answer that is Julie Ryan. Julie Ryan is a psychic and medical intuitive, sensing what medical conditions and illnesses a person has, and facilitating energetic healings. She's also an inventor and author. As a radio and podcast host of the popular show Ask Julie Ryan, she scans callers and answers their spiritual questions. Most recently, Julie published Angel Messages, a picture book series where angels answer kids' tough questions. I had her on episode 16 of A Psychic Story when the podcast first launched, and we talked about the magic of medical intuition. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So just to kind of kick us off with all of that, I mean, I know it's a lot, but for this episode in particular, a lot of adults have questions about, you know, is their child psychic? Please share a little bit about your background and your expertise with the listeners.
All right. I'd be delighted to. I'm a businesswoman and an inventor of surgical devices sold throughout the world who learned how to do woo-woo, and I'm a buffet of psychicness. So what that means is I learned how to do all this stuff. I did not have dead people chasing me in childhood, or if I did, I didn't know it, let alone what I would have done with that information. And how this works is I connect to spirit. Once we connect to spirit, we can do it all. We can do medical stuff. I can scan people. I'm like a human MRI. I can see broken bones, torn ligaments, viral infections, bacterial infections, all that kind of stuff, cancer, whatever. Facilitate energetic healings. Communicate with spirits, both attached to bodies and the spirits of the deceased. I can scan pets. I can talk to pets that are alive. I can talk to pet spirits that are dead. We can, let's see what else, past life stuff, tell how close to death somebody is, talk to angels, talk to spirit guides. It's just a blast. It's so much fun.
And how did you get started in this? I know you shared about that on episode 16 when we talked way back, but for people who may not have listened to that episode, share.
That was 3 years ago, Nicole. I looked that up.
Mm-hmm.
In 2019. I thought, oh my goodness, time flies when you're having fun, huh?
I know, right?
I was given a book called Anatomy of the Spirit by a woman named Dr. Carolyn Mays, PhD. And she called herself a medical intuitive. And I thought, what the heck is that? I'd never heard that term before. And I was in the hospital supply industry for 30 years and an inventor of surgical devices, as I mentioned, that are sold globally, still on the market. Some of them 30 years ago, I invented them and they're still being sold. And back then, ladies, we didn't have internet to go to yet. So I did the old-fashioned thing and I went to a bookstore. I went to a Barnes & Noble to see if there was anything else out there. And I found a book called Hands of Light by Barbara Brennan, who's a former NASA physicist who parlayed very complex quantum physics language into understandable English for the non-scientific mind. That would be me. And really resonated with what she was talking about. She was talking about using quantum energy, quantum physics principles to heal, to help facilitate healing. And I called her school after I read read her book. And I said, do you guys have anybody in my area teaching this stuff? And they said, yeah, we do. And so I studied with this woman for 6 years. I took a six-year curriculum. And my friends and family kept saying, why are you doing this? Because I was a mom and a wife and a businesswoman and running companies and stuff like that. I'm studying this woo-woo stuff. And they said, why are you studying that? What are you going to do with that? I said, I don't know. It's just interesting. Well, why are you wasting your time? I don't know. I'm just being led to do it. So fast forward 30 years, and now I do this full time. I've sold a couple of companies and had some time free up, and here we are today. And I teach people how to do this in 4 Saturdays in a row, and people all over the world. I think we've had people from 14 countries so far. Everybody from physicians and other medical providers to judges, lawyers, actresses, Broadway stars, housewives, plumbers, truck drivers, teachers, professors. It doesn't matter. We all come in with the ability, and it's just a matter of developing and enhancing it. So it's really turned into something very different for me because it's the first thing in my life, and I have founded 9 companies in 5 industries in 30 years. And it's the first time I've ever done anything where I didn't have a business plan, just going where I'm led. And it is a ball of having so much fun doing it. And people say, well, what are you going to do next? I don't know. I'll just see what it shows up, see when I get the inspiration.
I'm curious, when you do the medical intuitive work, are you scanning on all of the energy levels? So like the physical, spiritual, mental, emotional, and what does that look like as you're doing the scans? Or is it just primarily the physical as you're doing the body scans? I know they're all interconnected, right? But it just, some practitioners do them all together and some do them individually.
Great question. When I connect with somebody initially, it's like I have a hologram of them in my mind's eye and I envision shooting energy from their feet up through the top of their head. And it's just like I'm looking at an x-ray or a CT scan or an MRI. The energy is always going to go to a certain place. And then there will be something identified and then some type of energetic healing that will begin. And that can take the form of something getting added, something getting removed. I watch procedures all the time in my mind's eye that emulate what I saw in the operating room for all those decades. And sometimes I see healings that utilize methodologies and devices that haven't been invented yet. Regardless of what I'm seeing in my mind's eye, I'm very descriptive with the person with whom I'm talking, whether it be a client or whether it be somebody who calls into my show. I have a weekly show that's a syndicated radio show that we release as a podcast. We record it and release as a podcast. So people call in from all over the world and ask me a question from my buffet of psychicness. And so I'm very descriptive because if they can envision what I'm describing, it helps integrate the healing into their bodies. So that's on the physical side. And then I always look at what I call the energy field membrane. And that's the container that holds the energy that makes up our body and our spirit. And it reminds me of really thin, stretchy saran wrap, the kind that you get on a tray of chicken breasts from the grocery store. You know how that stuff's thinner and stretchier than the Glad wrap maybe that's in a box in our kitchen drawers? When there's a tear or a hole in that, which most people have after the age of about 15, there's an energy leak. Energy leaks always precede any kind of medical condition, and they're caused by an energy block, a la Eastern medicine, acupressure, acupuncture, clear the block, get the chi to move, that whole concept. Energy blocks in turn are caused by an emotional event, either in this life or a past life. So I envision myself going into that tear or hole, and I'm shown a scene, and I'm given a year. Like, it was 1987, and you were 3, and you fell off your trike, and your big brother laughed at you and made fun of you. And we think, well, that was no big deal. But it was to your 3-year-old little self when that was going on. Or it could be something really dramatic. One of my favorite stories is I was working with a client in Guernsey, which is a northern isle off the coast of the UK. And she had this huge hole in her energy field membrane. And I went in and I said, I see you as a preteen and I see an explosion behind you. It's like I'm Alice in Wonderland walking through the looking glass. You know, and like, it's like I'm walking into a movie scene. And I said, does that mean anything to you? And she said, yeah, I was a victim of an IRA bombing when I was 11. And I spent 3 months in the hospital. I said, okay. That qualifies as an emotional event on the opposite end of the spectrum. Normally, it's something fairly benign. And I'm going for, where did that energy block begin? not necessarily what's the most dramatic thing that's happened in your life, but where did it begin? Because it reminds me of a little kernel of unpopped popcorn. Get stuck in the energy field, other life events, energy piles on top of it, eventually causing enough pressure causes a blowout in that membrane. So as soon as we illuminate what caused that energy block, it, eradicates all the other energy from all the other emotional events in one fell swoop, has the energy field membrane, allows it to heal instantly, and then the body's working on full power. So I believe that's the most important part of a healing, because we can fix body parts all day long, but if you're leaking power, why bother?
Yeah, no, exactly. It's like our energy is all connected on the physical, the spiritual, the emotional, the mental. So if one is not operating on full cylinders or balanced, or like you said, leaking energy, then it's going to impact everything else.
Well, and I use analogies a lot when I'm doing this work because it gives our human minds a frame of reference for all this woo-woo stuff we're talking about. And my analogy for this is, imagine your car's not working, so you take it to the mechanic and they put a new radiator in, but you got a dead battery. Well, okay, what's the point? Your car's still not going to run right. You probably won't be able to get it started on its own. So same kind of a thing. And it's really interesting what shows up. I would say after the age of about 15, people have an energy field membrane leak. The cool thing about this, though, and I've done this with tens of thousands of clients and callers into my show over the years, I've never seen an energy field membrane rupture after it's been healed, ever. I'm not saying it can't, but I would think at this point I would have seen something. So I would at least venture to guess it's highly unlikely. And I equated also to how psychologists, when they have a client in therapy, they'll say, well, we're going to talk about your life and it's going to be as if we're peeling an onion a layer at a time. My point is, let's just get the onion out by the root for this medical healing. And there's always room for psychoanalysis too, but let's get this cleared out all at one time. I'm a businesswoman. I want it to be efficient.
Well, yeah. And also the visual I was getting when you were talking through it is like when you break a bone, on that break, it grows back stronger. So it's going to be very, very rare, if ever, that that exact spot on your bone is going to break again once it's healed.
Good point. I'm going to steal that, Nicole.
You can. You can borrow it. You heard it here first. No, I'm just kidding.
I'll give you credit.
I would love to pivot and go to what gave you the idea to write your angel messages book for children. How did that come about?
I have so many moms, have had and still have so many moms who say, can you please put something in a book for my child? How do I explain to my child that he can see my dead grandfather who's been dead for 20 years and knows all this stuff about my grandfather that I didn't even know? And it turns out he's right. And he tells me my grandfather's visiting him in his room at night. And I'm thinking, what? And she said, there's no way he would know this stuff. And then moms that say, I need to be able to explain to my child how my child knows information about past lives. And we can corroborate the information that he's telling us with historic documents online. And they'll say, this kid can't even read yet. So how does he know he was a Civil War soldier in a you know, infantry group and who his commanding officer was and the date of some big battle and that kind of stuff? And then lastly, how do we explain to our little children when somebody dies? And we say, well, grandma's in heaven now. And little Susie's going, no, she's not. She's asleep in that box at the front of the room because they're at the funeral home for the viewing. And so that's how the books came about. And I have a great story I'd love to share about validation for me to go ahead and take the leap on that. And that's how this whole ride has unfolded for me. I'll get an idea and then I get validation and then I take a step and then something opens up and I take another step. And before long, it's materialized. I was driving to Chicago. I live in Birmingham, Alabama. And I was driving to Chicago with my husband to see my brother and sister-in-law. And it's about an 8-hour drive, I guess. And I was telling my husband, I said, I'm being led to write a children's book. And my book for grown-ups, Angelica Tennant's, was already out. And I said, I'm being led to write a children's book. And he said, really? And I said, yeah. So I was talking to clients in the car, because I was captive in the car for all those hours. And I had a gal call in who was a former consultant for a PBS, consulted on Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and all these children's shows for over 20 years. And we were talking and she was telling me this, and now she's working for another company, still in the education field. And I said, well, that's interesting because I'm being led to write a children's book. And she said, well, okay, just send me the manuscript and I'll be happy to check it out. So now she's my consultant on all my children's books. I mean, within 5 minutes of me saying to my husband, I'm being led to write a children's book, that's number one. Number two, we get to my brother's house. The first night, my sister-in-law's brother and his wife came over. The wife, somehow we got talking at dinner, and the guys were in the family room watching football, and the gals were just in the dining room chit-chatting. And she mentioned that her brother died when she was five. And she said, I came from a big Italian family. And she said, there were just all these Italians wailing at my house, and nobody could tell me what happened, just that Billy or whatever his name was in heaven. She said, I wish somebody would have had a book that somebody could have read to me that I could have, you know, had understanding of what was going on. I'm thinking, okay, this is the same day and I'm getting this sign in the same day. And then the next morning, I woke up in the guest room at my brother and sister-in-law's house, and I get these divine downloads in the morning, and I got angel messages. That's the name of the series. And you're going to write a series of books. So, you know, what do? I have patents and trademarks, lots of them. So I'm on my phone in bed. My husband's already up and downstairs having breakfast. I'm in bed checking to see if I can trademark angel messages. And it's available. So I sent an email to my intellectual property lawyer, my attorney, and I said, here, trademark this, get the ball rolling on this. And then I checked the domain name, and that was available.
That's very rare.
I reserved it, and I hadn't even gotten out of bed yet. And it had been less than 24 hours since those three major signs had come to me. And now the fourth book in the series will be out here shortly.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. That's amazing. I would love to hear a little bit from C about your experiences like growing up, because you've had a lot of them as a child going through just psychically what you experienced. So anything resonating here for you? Any questions you'd like to ask Julie?
Well, you know, it's funny, Julie, because you said you didn't grow up seeing dead people. I did. So that's what started everything for me. And you know, it was just as far as I just saw great grandma walking down the hall one day, you know, and so that was kind of where my journey began. But I think that that's fascinating. I think it's needed that you're writing this book for kids and how kids can connect with that. Because in my family, I was kind of told not to talk about it, that what I was seeing was real, but we don't talk about it. And so I think what you're providing is something that's exceptional for families to be able to talk about it and open up conversation about it in a very safe way. And so I think that's wonderful. I am curious, you said, you know, earlier that we all come in with intuitive ability. Can you maybe talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. We all come in being able to communicate with spirit and being able to communicate telepathically. That's how little children have the ability. And to your point, see, about the age I find of around 7-ish or so, the grown-ups in the child's life are starting to say, okay, honey, we don't talk about this outside of our house. Or they say, that's your imagination, that's not real. And they hear that from parents, grandparents, teachers. And then they hear from their friends, you're just weird. There's something weird about it. That's just weird. And so they shut it down, the ability. But we all have this intuitive sense where most of us, if not all of us, have experienced, we think of somebody and then we get a call or an email or a text, or we run into them, a text from them, an email from them, a call from them, and we say, oh my gosh, I was just thinking of you just yesterday and here you are. What a coincidence. No coincidence there. It's your telepathic ability. It's your intuitive ability. Furthermore, when we have a feeling about something, we would call it a gut feeling. With women, they'll say, well, her female intuition, gut feeling, same thing, all the same thing. And you say, gosh, I wish I would have just followed my gut feeling on that because intellectually it didn't make sense, but my gut was telling me to do something else. Pretty much every time you don't follow your gut, you regret it. And that's all of us can relate to stories like that. So also to your point, C, that's what is happening with my books, is it gives children the opportunity to, and it's just natural to them. They don't know there's anything wrong with it, but it gives them the opportunity to put meaning behind what's just natural for them. And also it gives them permission to continue it, and it gives them a set of problem-solving skills that they can use in every area of their life. It's kind of like, you know, when you eat food, it comes out the other end. You don't find out how and what the mechanics of that is until you're in school and you're educated on it. Well, same thing like this. This is something that's very natural. And this is the parent or the grandparent reading to them saying, okay, well, here's how this works. And here's why you're able to see your dead great-grandmother, even though your other adults in your life can't see her. Yes, it's valid. Yes, you are seeing her. Yes, it's okay. Yes, you can communicate with her.
I think that's a great time or point to kind of pivot and talk about what are the different psychic abilities and how we would categorize them and just talk about them. Because you hear a lot of times people talk about the clairs, right? The different types of clairvoyance. But then also there's the categories of, is somebody an empath or a medium or a psychic medium? Or, you know, there's just so much out there. So would love to hear from you, Julie, for the people that come to you, and also from your perspective, how do you categorize them? But then also for children too, we'll get into that as like a part two, is how would then we share that with parents or teachers or other adults that would have psychic children?
I don't categorize anything. It's all about connecting with spirit. So often in our Western world, we have come up with silos for things. Think of the medical industry. You go to the neurologist or the cardiologist or the gynecologist or whatever. It's all the human body. It's all one system. What I teach and what I do is I don't get wound up in the weeds. That stuff's weeds to me. I don't get lost in the weeds. I connect to spirit. Spirit directs where we're going to go. What I do find and what I do teach is for us to trust how the information comes into us, because that's going to be our primary way initially of how we get information. For instance, I'm a visual learner, so I see things in my mind's eye, but I also hear things, feel things, smell things, know things, all of that stuff. And what I find is those skills ramp up the more you use your abilities. But just like all of us come in with a way that we have that's a primary way to learn, if I meet you at a party, I'm going to remember your face, but I am not going to remember your name unless I see it, because I'm a visual learner. You can tell me your name 15 times, I'm not going to remember it. So I came up with this little trick where I'll envision writing your name in my head so I can see it in my mind's eye to help me remember it. Somebody who's auditory, same thing. Information's going to come into them in a way that's going to match up with how they learn, just because it's the easiest route. And I don't think it makes sense to try and get somebody to do something a different way than what's natural for them. I teach, let's figure out what's the best way for you to get information from spirit and communicate with spirit. The rest of this stuff's irrelevant. I equate it to, you've got a child who is a left-handed child and you're forcing the child to write with their right hand. Why? Who cares? And that's how I feel about all of this intuitive stuff. I don't get in the weeds with the clairs and the categories and any of that jazz. You connect to spirit, it's instant. What do you want? We connect our satellite dish head to any spirit, whether we knew them or not. Who do you want to talk to? Your great-grandmother? See? You want to talk to Moses, you want to talk to Elvis, it doesn't matter. You just think of them, that connects your satellite dish head to their frequency. Every spirit has a frequency they keep throughout all their lifetimes. You're on the Elvis channel. You can talk to Elvis about anything you want. And that's what children do naturally. And I think what we do is we get wound up in these categories, and it's just like, make it easy. Why do you want to complicate it?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, that's the whole reason why I have the podcast called A Psychic Story, is it's actually meant to kind of break down and not to necessarily call people psychics and for all those categories. But I do think depending on where somebody is in their spiritual journey or growth, they don't necessarily understand how they might be receiving that information, or especially how a child is receiving that information. So like when we talk about empathy, some of us just have a stronger empathy, right? Whether you want to call it a gene or just a sense and ability that we tend to pick up more, and it's a little bit more sensitive. I remember I was actually thinking about this before this interview when, and I know everyone's going to roll their eyes if they've heard of the story before again, but when I was a kid, when people would step on ants, I would just go into like this huge throes of just crying fits and empathy and waves and feeling it. And my parents were like, why are you so sensitive? And, you know, going back to the shutting down, you know, you tend to like turn it down, but the empathy was something that I felt so intensely and so deeply. Not every child or not every person born here on earth has it necessarily to that level, right? Some children also experience ghosts or people who have passed over and they can see them versus, you know, so just having an understanding, I guess, of like what those look like. It's not necessarily categorizing and defining it as much. It's just starting to kind of understand where they are in that process and in that step of their journey.
I go back to, how does your child learn? Ask your child a memory question. What do you remember about your first day at the park? Watch their eyes. If they're a visual learner, they're going to look up and they're going to give you a visual answer. Oh, the slide was bright red. There were so many kids that were on the slide and the line was really long. It's a visual answer. An auditory child is going to say, oh my gosh, the birds were so loud at that park. They were just chirping and singing. And I remember there was a flock of birds and they were so noisy. They're going to give you an auditory answer. Kinesthetic child or an empathic child is going to say, oh, the sun was shining and it was warm. And I went down the slide and the slide was really hot. And so I had to keep my hands off because I could have, it just, the slide was so hot when I went down. They're going to give you a feeling answer. So that's going to be your first clue, not only how your child learns, which is important because when you're teaching your child things, you want to present the information in a way that they can absorb it easily based on that type of learning. And you'll know that that's how they're absorbing intuitive information as well, just because it's the easiest way for the information to come in.
Mm-hmm. And can you share some examples or stories about some people have come to you about just understanding or knowing that a child was psychic, how those things manifest and how they show up?
Sure. One of my favorite stories is about a friend of mine, her three-year-old grandson. His name's Walter. Isn't that darling? They called Walt. Walter was in the lake with his mom. He was holding on to his mom. And he said, Mommy, you're my favorite of all my mommies. And she said, Honey, I'm your only mommy. And he said, no, Mom, you're my favorite of all my mommies. And again, she said, Honey, I'm your only mommy. He said, Ma, babies come in. They're born to a mommy and daddy. They grow up. They die. They come back. They're born to a new mommy and daddy. They grow up. They die. And you're my favorite of all my mommies. And so my friend's calling me going, what the heck? You know, what do we tell Walt? And I say, thank you. Have your daughter say thank you. Because he gets it. He's three. He didn't see that on a TV show somewhere. He didn't see that in a book. He just knew it. He came in and he knew it. One of my favorite videos that a client sent me is of baby Charlie. Baby Charlie is a toddler. She's just starting to say a few English words. You know, mostly she speaks in Martian. She's like jibber jabbering and she knows what she's saying, but nobody else really knows what she's saying. And she keeps pointing up to this corner of the room and she keeps saying, kitty cat, kitty cat, kitty cat. And her grandmother who sent me the video said, well, Charlie, that's right. But how do you know that? She keeps going, kitty cat, kitty cat. Well, the grandmother then pans to the wall. There's a shelf on the wall with a box with her cat's ashes in it. And this baby knows this. I mean, she can't even speak yet. She speaks a few words and she said it to me and she said, how does she know this? And we'll see children that'll be playing with different spirits that are in the room. And, you know, with all the closed circuit cameras and things that they have now, they can see orbs flying around the room and the kids are playing. Well, those are spirits. I have a client. One of my other favorite stories is I have a client who was telling me about her little boy who was four, who said that her grandfather, who'd been dead for 20 some years, maybe even 30 years, used to come play trains with him. And the story was, Grandpa was an engineer on the railroad and had toy trains at the house and had a train in the backyard that he used to take my client and her siblings for a ride on kind of like Walt Disney's train in his backyard. And she's saying, there's no way that we've never talked about my grandfather. And not only is he saying that he's seeing my grandfather, but my grandfather comes and plays trains with him. So that's just a little snippet of some of the fabulous stories that I get. And it's really fun.
Any with your own children when they were growing up or yourself?
Yeah, not for me personally, but my son, I have one child. I always told him, I said I reached perfection after him, so I didn't need to have any more.
No pressure on him at all.
The center of the universe. Yeah, he's 30 now, but we still call him the center of the universe. When he was a baby and I'd be rocking him and giving him his bottle before he went to bed. And he's older. He would point up in the corner of the room and I'd say, what do you see? And I hadn't even started anything. I didn't know anything about woo-woo at this point. And he'd say, a red ball. And I said, really? And he'd say, yeah, a red ball. I couldn't see it, but he could see it. So I knew enough to let him be able to have some acknowledgement on it. The other thing is, I swear, I think the kid could channel at a young age because he thought he was Captain Hook from the age of about 3 to 5.
That's adorable.
And everything was Captain Hook. And when he walked into preschool the first day, he had his index finger. He would put it in a hook and he'd just go like this. And he, you know, like show people his hook. And then he would play secret detective. My maternal grandfather was a detective in the Columbus, Ohio Police Department, and unfortunately was killed in the line of duty when my mom was 12. So his name was Detective Klein. So Jonathan had a trench coat and he had a hat and he had sunglasses and he had a pad. And I would follow him around the house and we had Mardi Gras beads and those were the jewels that the thief was stealing. And he'd go in the playroom closet and he'd go into the crime lab to talk to Joe, his crime lab guy that worked in there. And then we'd have to go in the office because Joe was going to send him a report. And then something had come in on the fax. And so that was back when we had thermal paper. So he'd rip off the report and he'd read it. And then we got my dad involved in Ohio and he would send crime lab information and we'd have to read it. And it was just amazing, this child's imagination and a lot of the information he was making up as he went. He didn't even know.
He was channeling. Yeah.
He was channeling. He was going to the crime lab and he knew where to go and he knew that the report was going to come off of a fax machine.
Right. Which is just insane.
Yeah. And I think this series of books and other ways that we can validate our children's intuition, it helps foster their imagination. And imagination is what makes the world go round. You know, I mean, it's people who are inventing things. It's people that are looking at new ways of doing things. We're always creating. And that imagination, I think, so often gets stymied, gets stifled, not only in school, but also in our families.
Yeah, I mean, and that to me, because I was, you know, I've been doing a lot of soul searching and just tapping into higher self and asking guides and angels, okay, so you wanted to do this series. So what is going to be the most helpful? And they just brought me back to my childhood and how your imagination is just so magical and beautiful and there's no boundaries. And you can talk about daydreaming, what's reality, what's not reality, but there's a part of it because you're so connected. When you talk about connecting to spirit, you're so connected to source that you haven't been disconnected. And that's where information's channeled. That's where you're getting messages. That's how you're, again, connected to your higher self and spirit. And as a result, the more you can do that, it's not validating it as much and giving children ideas as much. It's just encouraging it and asking them questions and letting them lead it. That creates that, I don't want to say muscle memory, but spiritual memory, so that they stay connected and not separated, so that as they get older, it grows with them versus being stifled.
I agree. And see, to your point earlier, that it's a way to start the conversation with a child and say, okay, well, how about this? What do you think? I think your point too, Nicole, about imagination being so much a part of spirit. Oftentimes when I'm doing a medical healing on somebody and spirit's working through me and with me to help facilitate the person healing themselves, because nobody heals anybody else. We just all heal ourselves. And I find that imagination gives us the opportunity to envision things that we want. And there's a big difference between imagination and fantasy. Fantasy is something we want, but we're not doing anything active about it. Imagination is we're envisioning things. We're bringing in that energy in the form of a visual or a kinesthetic kind of a sense, and it's helping to integrate it into the body. And imagination, oftentimes when I'm doing a healing, several times a week, certainly, I'll see a new healing that I haven't seen before. And I'll say, oh, cool. I haven't seen this before. Wow, this is cool. And then I say, that just is appealing to my inventor brain. So it makes it really fun, because once you use your imagination, whenever any one of us looks at a mountain, well, it's not really a mountain. It's information, it's energy that we're perceiving in a way that we were taught, this is what a mountain looks like. But if you break it down to the particles that are coming in through our eyes and how the brain processes it, nobody looks at it the same way. And we can't see it through somebody else's eyes. We can only see it through our own. So I think that all plays into the whole equation as well.
What questions do you have, C? I could see on your face you had some.
Well, I just, you know, speaking to imagination, obviously a lot of young children have no problem tapping into that. But you had mentioned earlier about kids kind of shutting down that intuitive ability once they get these outside influences coming in. What would you say, and Nicole, you can speak to this as well, to encourage parents to encourage their children to keep that doorway open, so to speak, of imagination and connecting with spirit?
Limit screen time. I think that our children are so inundated with electronics at a very early age. Toddlers know how to use an iPad way better than I do, and they can't speak in sentences yet. And so they come in knowing how to do it. They don't have to have as much screen time. But I find that if we can give them some downtime and just play, old-fashioned play with them, and give them the opportunity to let their imaginations go. And instead of, okay, this is how this looks, this is how we do this, this is when we're watching all that screen time. Not to say that we need to stop all of it, but certainly I think limit it. And I think be very cognizant of what your child is watching. I think that it's really frightening what these little kids are being exposed to with the video games and the, you know, and the other stuff on different platforms that they have access to. And so that would be my first suggestion, is limit screen time.
Yeah. And then I would say, well, I was just going to say the limit the screen time, but then I think what Julie said about the plane is just, it's something to be said about also the processing, the mental process that a child is going through when they're playing. It kind of forces that creativity. There's socialization, but then there's also the ability to play by themselves and to interact with other energies around them. That was the time that I would sense my angels and guides the most, was when I was in my room by myself, or I was outside and I was in that mindset and aware of everything that was happening around me. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Like I'm able to pick up on certain things because I'm actually focused on the here and now, in the present. And so, yeah, that I would say is another big one. What about you? See, what helped you when you were younger?
Well, you know, we had one TV and we had like three channels and that was it. And so we didn't really watch TV. So I was outside. I was blessed to live growing up on my grandparents' farm. And so we had the cows and, you know, everything all around. And so we were outside from, you know, as soon as school got out until mama called us back in for dinner. And then a lot of times back out until it was time to get ready for bed. So there was a lot of imagination, imaginative play, and a lot of time to contemplate. I think also for me, being able to use the screen of my imagination when I read books, that was really huge for me because I was an avid reader. And when I could read, I could see, and I am a visual learner. And so I could see the scenes playing out in my imagination as I read. And for me, that was very helpful when I'm teaching students as well. I ask them to think of a scene that they're reading and to try to imagine it. And that's how we connect with spirit, you know, in a way that can kind of see things. So yeah, everything that you guys said, but the reading also really helped.
Yeah, reading's wonderful. I heard some sort of tip I don't have kids myself, but I'd heard that somebody had said that if their children wanted to have screen time, then they would have to read like two or three books to equate a certain amount of screen time. It's almost like credit. So like 75% was reading, 25% was screen time. I think right now it's the flip, right? I would say if anything, most parents are like 75% screen time, and I would hope it would be more, but probably 25% of actual reading time. But it really helps you process things mentally and really helps you dive into that creativity and that imagination when you're reading. So that's a really good one too. What other kind of either tips or advice would you give, Julie, for adults who have psychic children? This could also be teachers too, like, because I know that that's a fine line, right? When you're a teacher, you can't necessarily talk about or teach that level of psychicness or intuition or spirituality. But there are some things that you, I guess, could just do to be open and help them, whatever stage they're in that process.
When you were talking about that just now, Nicole, what came to mind was Goldie Hawn's initiative in the schools to bring meditation into the schools. And I'm not remembering the name of her organization, but anybody can just do an internet search on Goldie Hawn and meditation. And she has a program that they're implementing in schools. I want to say she's been doing it for over 10 years, and it's been very successful, and it's in a lot of countries now, and she's getting it put into other school systems. I think use books to, like my books and others, that talk about this for children in a way that it's really understandable, and just foster the conversation. And if the child says something, listen to them, even if you can't see what they're seeing or sense what the child is sensing. Let them just expand on it, expound on it, talk about it. And we do that with people as they're dying, because at the end of life, university-based research shows that 90% of people see the spirits of deceased loved ones and pets as they're approaching death, either in visions or dreams. And that's that ability, that innate ability that's always there, even if it's been shut down for decades. And this is a very elderly person. And what I suggest to clients when they have a loved one who's dying is, even if they can't see grandma and their mom is seeing her mother who's been dead for a long time, you just say, okay, what does she have to say? How does she look? How does it feel to see her? Just carry on a conversation. We used to think that our loved one was hallucinating. Well, they're not hallucinating. They're seeing spirit, even if we can't. And that's what my grown-up book is about, angelic attendance. And it's the same with children, I think. We just have a conversation with them and let them talk about it. And they're going to lead us where they need some reinforcements and where they need some validation for what they're seeing. I don't know. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. So now C, for you, I know you had a different experience growing up, whereas my family was supportive, yours, like you mentioned earlier, were like, we don't talk about this. What would have helped you looking back and knowing what you know now? What would you say helped you, or any advice or tips you would give to adults?
Well, for adults with kids specifically, you know, I think just validating the experience and not making necessarily even a big deal about it or negating it or any of that, just saying, you know, being curious, I think, is the big thing. When a parent comes to me, you know, a client comes to me and says, hey, my kid's having these experiences, say, okay, ask questions. You know, I had a teenager once who had come to her mom and had been seeing this ghost in her bedroom. And her mom had the great sense to say, well, let's interview the ghost. And so they did. And she interviewed this man and eventually was able to Google and research, and he was indeed real. And so, and then after that, she was not scared anymore. And she was able to say, well, thank you for your time. You can now leave, you know, protect her own space. But I think that curiosity is a great treasure that parents can give to kids. And again, on the other side of that, not making a big deal, you know, oh, my kid's special. You know, we're all special. We can all exercise this ability and connect with spirit and those on the other side.
Yeah, I have a friend and I asked if I could share this. I'm not going to use their names, but her and her husband have this arrangement where if one parent flips out about something, the other parent has to tap in. Like you got to cover for the other person. That's whether it's diaper duty or and kids have gotten sick or whatever. And there was one instance where they were woken up in the middle of the night and their little girl was just like screaming. She was like super scared. And they both went in and the husband at first was asking like, what's going on? And she described that there were these beings, ghosts, whatever entities standing outside her door. And it freaked him out so much that when his wife came in, my friend, he was like, I'm done. I'm tapped out. Like, this is all you. So she's like, I'm petrified. I have no idea what's going on because they don't see or talk to ghosts or anything like that. And so this is totally new territory for them. So she did exactly that. See, is that she was asking, okay, what's going on? But the first thing she did was, okay, well, where are they standing? What's going on? And then the mom said, just mama bear instinct kicked in. And she's like, you're scaring her. You need to go away right now. So then she asked her daughter, are they gone? And she said, yes. And she's like, okay, this is what you need to do when they come back. If they're scaring you, just tell them to go away. That sort of thing. And so then the next time they did, she said, okay, just like that, let's ask them and said, okay, now we're done. You're never going to come back. And then they never have since then. But I find that we're adults and we oftentimes don't necessarily know how, especially if you have not had any psychic experiences to that extent growing up or to getting to that aspect of your life. And then your kids are, it can be a little unnerving because you're just like, okay, what do I do? But what we're saying to date is just have a healthy sense of curiosity, ask the questions, but not drop, you know, ideas into their heads and then take it from there. And hopefully at that point, they just start to learn and they're encouraged and they have their own confidence that allows them to, you know, help themselves at that stage and where they're at. I don't know if there's anything else that you would have to add, Julie, there.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was brilliantly said. So eloquent. Good job on that. I think, too, that it's important to let our children know that all spirits are pure love and that we're all hardwired for fear. So, of course, we're going to go to fear first when it's something we don't understand. I have a quick story about that. I have a friend who, this was long before I ever knew her, she said I had an evil spirit try to come through my front door. And I chased it away. I said, well, tell me about it. And I can do an instant replay, like in a football game. You're watching on TV and there's a touchdown. They'll do an instant replay of the touchdown. So I saw this spirit coming through this very thick wooden front door that she had. And the face was distorted. It looked like the robbers of long ago that would put a pair of pantyhose on their heads, you know, to make their faces be distorted so they wouldn't be recognizable. And I said, that wasn't an evil spirit. That was just a spirit trying to get through that heavy wooden dense door. And it was like it was pulling his face back.
Easy for you to say, Julie. If I saw a face coming through my front door, I thought it might be a little freak too.
Well, yeah, but it wasn't an evil spirit. All these years she had said it. She knew it was an evil spirit. She even got up. She had an umbrella stand next to her front door in the foyer. And her son's golf club was there and she got the golf club out and she was getting ready to hit the front door. I said, well, yeah, that would have helped a lot because spirits don't have any mass. And she said, yeah, that's a good point. Anyways, we did an instant replay and talked to the spirit that was coming through. Well, what we learned was it was a guy who had died in the Civil War. I live in the Deep South. And it was a Confederate soldier who died in the war, and he was looking for his daughter. Well, his daughter had reincarnated as my friend's daughter. And we got her name, and we got his name, and we got where they lived, and we got all that information. And we got a lot of information about their story. And so it totally negated the fear. And like both of you have said, interview the spirit. What do you need? How can I help you? What is it you want me to know? Is there anything I can do for you? Because all spirits are pure love.
Yes.
And people say, wow, but they were really scary. I said, well, yeah, because it's your human frame of reference kicking in here. Most of us in our Western culture, if we see a gargoyle, we think, oh, that's kind of creepy looking. But you show a picture of a gargoyle to somebody who grew up in an indigenous culture in the middle of the Amazon, and they're going to say, well, that's an interesting looking dog. I haven't seen one of those yet. They don't know to be afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all our frame of reference.
Yeah, no, very, very good point. Before we're done, I did want to ask you, why angels for you? You know, you obviously talk to different types, people who've passed over, as well as like your higher self and others, but why angels for you and also the books?
Why did I use angels in the series?
Well, no, I know probably why you use angels, but like what special meaning do angels have to you? Do they have a special place in how you work and how you channel and how you interact with people?
Not particularly, but I find that little children a lot of times are fascinated with angels and they're taught about angels. I was raised Roman Catholic and I, at 63, can tell you the guardian angel prayer that I said every night before I went to bed. Angel of God, my guardian dear, to whom God's love commits me here. I mean, I can recite it. So oftentimes little children are set up to have some general concept about angels because they're taught about angels. We see them at Christmas. They're in the stories, even in the main stream, whether somebody is religious or not is irrelevant. There are angels all over the decorations and there's angels on the trees and there's an angel oftentimes on the top of the Christmas tree and all of that. In every culture has angels. So I find that that's a universal concept that little children are very easy to accept. And it's usually already that they've accepted it and they have some idea that there's an angel that lives in heaven. So I thought, okay, perfect. I'll just use angels, something that little children have been exposed to give them messages about things. And in the books, like the angel messages for dogs, you know, your dog, the angel is saying your dog perhaps can do tricks if you give it treats. Your dog chooses the family that's going to take care of it. When your dog dies, you may still be able to see it, inherit it, and communicate with it. But a lot of it is just, well, dogs come in all sizes and they like to sniff each other's butts. That's even in there. You know, there's funny stuff in there that they know, right? Because they see their dogs doing that. But it's just hilarious. And that's probably the favorite page on the book for these little guys. You know, anything with butts or...
I definitely want to read. I know that they're for kids, but I want to read them.
Yeah. Well, and I think they educate the parents too, and the grandparents, people that are sharing them with their children.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. What, do you have any other questions for Julie C?
No, not right now. I have just so enjoyed having this chat with you. I'm so grateful you were able to come on.
Oh, my honor. I was delighted to be asked. Thank you so much.
Of course. And before we're done, anything else you're feeling led to share, Julie, that you're either getting downloaded or anything we didn't have a chance to cover that you wanted to bring up?
Everything about me is at AskJulieRyan.com. And for those of you that are listening that would like a free digital or audiobook download of my books, just go to AskJulieRyan.com, click on the Ask Julie button, just say, hey, I heard you on a Psychic Stories kid version. What are you calling this?
Kids edition.
And I'd love a copy of your books. And we'll send you a link for a free download of a digital and an audiobook. The audiobook's just in the grown-up book. The children's books are primarily about the illustrations. They have very few sentences in them. And the sentences that are in there are short. So if you have ADD and you have a short attention span as an adult, these will be perfect for you.
Spiritual ADD here for sure, especially when I get messages coming in from all angles. You can't not help but have it. Well, what a gift. Thank you so much for being on. Always an honor, always a pleasure. And then also when I say gift, for the gift that you have for listeners for that free download. And just want to say thank you and congratulations on your nationally syndicated show. That is amazing.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to A Psychic Story Kids Edition. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. For more information, go to apsychicstory.com or follow Psychic Kids on Instagram.